Okay, so do you know what you're going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
Xander?
I'm going to tell him how I feel. I'm going to tell him that I understand something is going on with him, that I've been trying to be patient, and that I don't want to be part of this anymore. I'm going to tell him that he needs to get help.
And then?
And then I'm going to do what I say.
That's right. You're going to do what you say.
And? If he makes puppy dog eyes or cries, I'm not going to cave.
That's right. What are you going to do then?
I'm going to do what I say.
Edward and I are on our way to visit Marty. He's convinced me not to hold back, to let Marty know what I'm really feeling. My only worry is that he won't understand what I'm trying to tell him. Or worse, that he will, and still somehow manipulate me into feeling guilty or wrong for my impatience. I feel I've been nothing but patient. I've taken a backseat to this whole ordeal, while literally being in the driver's seat. Edward drives to Leticia's house. It's late, but I know I'll lack the courage or conviction in the sober light of day.
Want me to come with you?
Yeah, sure.
There's a light on in the living room of Leticia's apartment home.
Hey, I know it's late, but...
Come in. Coffee?
Please.
I can't sleep.
Your boy was missing.
He's safe now.
Because of the detective?
The man who took him made a trade. Calderon for my boy.
And Marty?
He went after Calderon.
Did you try and stop him?
No.
Excuse me.
New man?
He's helping me say goodbye. I need to leave Parlor. I think I need to go somewhere new, where I can't forget everything that's happened. I can't be part of whatever's going on here.
They're going to kill Joseph, and then they're going to kill your friend.
How can you know that?
I know. Trust me, you can't let them.
Why?
Because.
That's not good enough.
Let him die then, but how will you feel if you haven't said goodbye?
I'm not gonna fall for that.
I know where they are.
Huh?
Marty and the detective.
How?
Don't worry about it.
Who called you just now?
We have to go. It was wonderful meeting you, ma'am. You have a very lovely home.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you as well.
Xander, now.
Wait.
Leticia disappears for a moment and returns, holding Olivia the piglet.
Take Olivia with you, please.
She carefully hands the piglet over to me.
I have enough going on without adding a pet to the mix. I think she misses Marty. She hasn't eaten. She's been crying.
Oh, I don't think that I could.
Xander, let's go.
Without protest, I follow Edward back to my rental car, where I relinquish my keys. I don't ask him how he knows where Marty is. I don't ask him where it is that we're going. He plugs an address into the onboard navigation and begins their drive. Olivia sleeps for the duration of the ride, her small body rising up and down with each of her tiny breaths. She's warm against my thighs, but I don't want to wake her. Edward drives for an hour, and then stops to fill up. I wait in the car as he pumps gas. When he's finished, he replaces the nozzle, but doesn't immediately come inside. He makes a call. I try not to eavesdrop, but, well...
Before dawn? I don't know if that's possible. We're still a way out.
I'm eavesdropping.
Hey.
Hey, you.
Ready to go?
Where are we going exactly?
To save your friend. Unless you didn't want to?
Why are you helping me, Edward? I know it can't be because we had sex in the backseat of a car. I mean, I'm good, but not drive a few hours out of the city good.
Is this something you picked up from being with him, Marty? Do you always have to question a good thing?
Edward reaches across and grabs my hand. He leans over the center console and places a kiss on my forehead. I can feel the sharp sting of guilt forming in the pit of my stomach. I knew it. He's no better than Marty. But I remain quiet and let him drive. Whatever his reasons are for helping me, he is helping me. Better just go along with it for now. We park along a tree line, slightly concealed in the overgrowth of hanging tree branches and unkept grasses.
El Lugar Fangoso?
The muddy place. It's a compound.
You think you know this is where they're keeping Marty and the detective?
Yes. Stay close behind me.
Edward hugs a tall brick wall, searching for something with the sharp beam of light from the flashlight of his cell phone.
If I knew what you were looking for, I could help.
Third brick, second row, third.
He finds a loose brick in the wall and removes it. Inside the hole in the wall is a large plastic bag with something stuffed inside.
There's only one.
One what?
Edward tosses me the plastic bag.
Put it on.
I tear open the bag Inside is what looks like a thick brown dress. It smells like mothballs and a wet dog.
A Halloween costume?
Robes. Quickly.
I quickly throw the old robes over my clothes, and Edward ditches the bag.
Right here? Right now? Don't we have more important things?
I can feel his erection pressing up against my back. Only, it's not an erection.
What are you doing?
Getting us in.
Edward hands me his gun.
Hold it up against my back. March me in there. Say you saw me snooping.
I don't. Look, man, I'm a terrible actor. Once in third grade, I got cast in our school play. To say my performance was wooden would have been an understatement. I even made our teacher cry.
That bad, huh?
Yeah, yes.
You can do this.
I press the gun to Edward's back, and he leads the way up the gravel path to the mansion on the hill. Everything is quiet. The doors to the home are wide open. Edward takes the gun from me and carefully enters, weapon drawn and at the ready.
Come on.
Edward enters the home. I follow. He steps down a long hallway with ornate tile flooring. It's really quite beautiful. He leads us to an empty ballroom. There's...
Oh my god, what the fuck?
In the center of the ballroom lays a brown bull, its neck ripped open. I set Olivia down as I rush to its side. There's blood everywhere. It's sprayed against the tables and the orchestral instruments.
It's dead.
There is blood on the knees of my robe as I stand.
Where is everyone? Where is Marty?
Outside.
Olivia runs towards an exit. At the back of the ballroom are two glass doors that lead out into a courtyard. I take one last look at the massive ballroom and feel a twinge of sadness for the murdered animal beneath the three-tiered chandelier. Unaware that I'm holding my breath, I follow Edward onto the stone-paved courtyard.
Olivia!
They're beyond. In the woods.
Do you have enough bullets?
We're not here to kill them.
Roger that. Save Marty.
We're here to observe.
Observe?
Edward shushes me. He leads the way beyond the paved courtyard and across the massive yard and into the woods. The sky is the gray of early morning. A few birds begin to sing. As we approach the clearing, I stop dead in my tracks.
Marty!
Martin Cruz kneels before a tree stump, his head low. The tribesmen surround him in a semicircle. They continue to chant. The leader of the tribe steps forward and onto the tree stump. He raises his arms to silence the chanting and removes the hood of his robes. It's the man from the car, the one who gave me the tapes of Martin's missing time. Marty is still kneeling before him like a knight in waiting.
My friends, for decades, we have tried and failed to finesse the ceremony, this rite we perform tonight. I think we are closer now than ever, for tonight we create miracles. We have honored Lepu, Sus, Aros, Inova, and Rama. Finally, we shall honor Dam, the gentle mayor. I cannot say it has been an easy journey, for who among us can? The communion of our reverend avatars has been most tricky. It is not easy to feed a turtle the breasts of her counter. Patience is that a godly virtue to which we all aspire. Tonight, as the sun rises, we witness the opening of a doorway. We humbly grant access to our world, to those long ago banished.
The man smiles sinisterly as two robed figures step forward from the trees. Each of them leads a white horse. They stop on either side of the tree stump, flanking the man in the smoking jacket.
It is time, friends.
The cloaked figure to the man's left removes a heavy hunting knife from within his robes. The blade glints even in the early light of dawn. In one swift motion, he plunges it deep into the ribcage of the horse and twists, puncturing the horse's lung. The mare tries to flee, fighting the robed man, who plunges the blade of the hunting knife deeper. There's a loud crack and the horse screams and falls to its side. With the white horse slowly bleeding out, turning red and then almost purple, the robed man rolls up the sleeve of his robes and using both hands plunges the knife into the dying mare's breastbone. Meanwhile, the horse to the man in the smoking jacket's right attempts to flee. The robed man mounts her and attempts to calm her down. He whispers something into the mare's ear and she quiets. It's messy work, but the first man finally reaches through the cavity and severs the arteries connected to the mare's heart. The road man is panting and covered in blood as he turns to hand the heart over to the man in the smoking jacket.
The heart is life-giving and complex. The heart represents love and spiritual connection. To give one your heart is to give them your being, your life. Take this life, Martin. Become the mayor. Believe in her as she believes in you.
For the first time, Marty looks up. His face is bruised, beaten. His eyes are wide. He lets out a sob as he takes the horse's heart from the man in the smoking jacket. I reach for Edward's hand, but turn to find he's no longer with me. I look around the crowd for him, but everyone looks the same. They're all in monastic robes, like I am, with the hoods up and obscuring their faces. Marty brings the heart up to his face. He closes his eyes, appearing to be ill, and then begins to devour the heart of the mare. There's a small shuffle among the trees, like a breeze. I look around and catch the eye of a young woman. She's quite pretty. I think she winks at me and tilts her head slightly to the left before disappearing into the trees.
The heart of the true believer! It's fairy tale nonsense. What does it mean to truly believe? Does one believe more than any other? Would you kill as many before you for your beliefs? Would you hold steadfast against a wave of doubt? What lengths would you go to find proof? This man has answered these questions, and now he must sacrifice for those beliefs.
The bloody robe man grabs Marty and turns him to face the crowd. He pins Marty's arms behind his back.
Communion is the spiritual joining of mankind and his maker. We honor this connection thusly. The heart is representative of the mayor, whose gentle and kind nature always comforted others. Here we have a mare as beautiful as Dam herself. She has sacrificed her heart to commune with this man who himself is the embodiment of Dam's nature. So too will he sacrifice. He will be the bridge between our worlds. His heart will provide nourishment to the final embodiment of Dam, from animal to man and back to animal, and finally bled to make way for the six. They are coming.
The chanting begins again. The wind picks up. A heavy gust which shakes the branches of the surrounding trees. Dirt and rubble and fallen leaves begin to stir. The sound of it is so loud I can hardly hear the chanting. I try to focus on Marty and the second robed man as he reaches into his garment for his knife. A woman screams out, letting her hood fall. She points to the east where the rising sun casts a pinkish-orange glow along the treetops. Only, upon second glance, there is no sun, and there's a shimmering like heat waves rising from asphalt. It's like a waterfall in mid-air, cutting through the trees on the horizon. You could almost slip through. The air around us is electric now. The hairs of my arms are standing straight up. I look to Marty, who shuts his eyes tightly. He begins to kick and struggle. They're going to cut out his heart, I think. And then they're going to feed it to the second horse before bleeding her to death, like the bull in the ballroom. Somewhere in the woods, the baby piglet begins to scream. I briefly think of Detective Calderon, who once told me that a piglet can scream as loud as a jet engine at takeoff. The man about to stab Marty is momentarily distracted. I rush forward.
Let him! Marty!
I attempt to wrestle the knife away from him, but I'm quickly overpowered.
Let me!
Witness!
This is it, I think. The end. I'm on my knees besides Marty, as a man in a robe is about to cut out his heart. I look to Marty, who appears to be so defeated, but unafraid.
Marty.
There's a loud ripping sound, as something begins to push past this shimmery veil. Slowly at first. It's round and black, floating in midair. It looks like leather. There are two holes on either side of it.
The nose!
The nose is followed by a muzzle.
Auros! Quickly! Kill the boy!
No, you can't!
I'm at a loss for words. The nostrils of the beast are the size of satellite dishes. It can't be. The muzzle is followed by the bridge of its nose and the eyes. I am staring into the eyes of a god.
Ah! 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 Ah!